And right now, it is my absolute pleasure to sit down and have a chat with my former boss, Bill Ford.
Thank you.
Hard question first, or?
I would expect nothing less. Go ahead.
I thought we would start by talking about this wonderful venue. You and I were talking at lunch, and I'm sure many of you in the audience remember when this was but a dream and all of the, what is it going to be called? But I didn't know you back then, but I know that you were very passionate about being sure that we use some of the existing infrastructure from the Hudson's building that so many of us held near and dear. Tell us about that.
Well, it was really fun doing this building. It was interesting because I got a call one day from one of the most prominent business people in this community, one you would all know. He's no longer with us, who said, "Will you come see me?" And I said, "Sure." And he said, "I hear you're thinking about doing a stadium downtown." And I said, "That's right." And he said, "It'll be the biggest mistake you'll ever make. Fans won't feel safe downtown. You won't get the police support. There's nothing for anybody to do before or after the games. And if you build it, they won't come." And this is coming from somebody who didn't make a lot of mistakes. But you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about this the other night. You know who the key person in all that, even back then, was? Mike Duggan. Because Mike was working.
No way.
Yeah, Mike was working for McNamara at the county. And McNamara and Dennis Archer, Mac became actually good friends over this project. But McNamara turned a lot of it over to Mike and said, "Hey, see if you can get this thing built." So Mike and I became very good friends over that period, and he was actually instrumental in getting it built. And of course, at the time, there was no way of knowing he would one day be mayor of Detroit.
That is crazy. We just had last week, I think it was just last week, right here at Ford Field, the announcement of the Detroit Sports Commission.
Right.
And how exciting that is. And I know see. The Lions were, you and Rod and, you know, your family were really behind that. Can you tell?
Well, I mean, it's great because we have venues now in this city that no other city has. No other city has, you know, four major sports teams all playing within a, you know, stone's throw of each other. And it's incredible. And so, and the other thing is big events want to come to big cities. So we've already hosted a lot of big events here, but there's so many more to come. And that's, you know, ultimately what we're trying to do.
So lots of questions, at least the ones that have come in so far from the audience, and as we heard with the students, everybody's interested in your perspectives on the future. The whole future of the mobility, I guess, versus the auto industry these days, and how, I mean, going back years, as I mentioned in the intro, I mean, you were an environmental person when it wasn't cool to be one. So you really have always been two steps ahead, I think, in this industry. Can you talk a little bit about?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is just, I think it's part of my role is to always look ahead. And, you know, we're still a family company. And as a family company, I'm always looking to the next generation and beyond. And that's sort of what drove my environmentalism early on, was it occurred to me as a young person that unless Ford got on the right side of this issue, and frankly, our whole industry had to get on the right side of the issue, that we were going to become a second-rate industry where the best and the brightest wouldn't want to come work with us and for us. And so, and then in 2011, I gave a TED talk about sweeping change that was going to come to the auto industry. And once again, I was kind of branded a heretic because people, what was happening at the time was everybody in our industry was looking at rising GDPs around the world. They were looking at growing middle classes in developing markets. And they were extrapolating out enormous sales figures. And I simply said, really? Where are they going to go? How are they going to move? Already you can't move in major cities around the world. You know, the thought that we were going to shove 3, 4, 5 times as many cars into an already overcrowded world with the infrastructure that we had simply made no sense to me. And so it was also clear that the business models that would come with this change were going to be dramatic. And so here we are today, and change is, you know, clearly not only upon us, but, you know, in full force. And everything about our industry, every single thing is changing. I hate using the word disruption because it's overused, but frankly, I think in this case, it's probably relevant. So the ownership model, you know, changing as we're sitting here. how a vehicle is propelled, the internal combustion engine giving way to electrification, 3D printing, the way we actually make a vehicle. Artificial intelligence is going to change the way vehicles interact with society and also the way they're made. Autonomous, the fact we're not going to have drivers in many of our cars. So if you look at our business, every single piece of the business, including the way we finance the vehicles, is going to change or is changing. Now, you can look at that one of two ways. It can be terrifying, and it is, because when you don't have a clear view of what it is that's going to happen, you know, and it's always very destabilizing and a bit unnerving. I prefer to look at it, though, is this is an amazing time. And if you look at all the great fortunes that have been made around the world, it's always been a time of great change and great disruption. So I think there are going to be great fortunes made again in this era. Some will be by new players. Hopefully some will be players that figured this out and will reinvent themselves and propel themselves into another iteration going forward, and another great fortune is made. So I think there's going to be, but there will be winners and losers now in a way that we haven't seen in some time.
So take that a step further. You've talked about in this space sort of these interrelated changes around demographics, technology, and behavioral. I know you just broke them down a little bit differently, but kind of talk about those three things as an ecosystem.
Well, I mean, you mentioned demographics, so everything is changing. So in the industrialized societies, we have an aging population. And if you think about providing mobility for them, it's going to look very different than it will look in a developing country, which has often got a very young population. The way you reach the population is going to be very different. We're already seeing it with social media, is disrupting traditional forms of advertising and other things. And so, one size won't fit all. I think we'll have certain things in kind of the Western world, if you will, where we will have aging populations that will require mobility solutions and ways that people interact with their vehicles that will be quite different than you'll see in developing areas. One of the things that's for sure is when we talk about mobility, 99% of the people talk about urban mobility and moving people in cities and moving goods in cities. Not just people, it's also goods. And that's hugely important. We're all focused on it. But you've also got a huge portion of the world where you've got enormous number of people that don't have access to basic needs and healthcare, and mobility to them will be something very different. So the challenge, I think, for us and others is how do you make people's lives better around the world? And the way you answer that will be very different depending upon things like demographics.
Do you want to address the other two, the technology and behavior?
Well, the technology, I feel like I just kind of touched on. I mean, all the technologies that I mentioned, connected vehicles, I suppose I didn't mention, but that was inherent in this, are really going to change everything. But here's an important point. Everybody that you talk to and almost everything you read is all about the technology itself. And people fall in love with the technology. And what we need to do is take a step back and say, wait, this is all about people. How are we making this technology available so we're actually making people's lives better? And if the technology isn't doing that, then it may be very cool technology, but we're not going to deploy it. So I think, everybody's focused also on the race. Who's going to be first with this? Who's going to be first with that? To me, it's not who's going to be first. It's who can translate whatever it is into a way that actually people will value and feel like is personal to them. And if we can do that, then I think we'll have done a great service to society and we'll have done a great thing for our business. You need the technology to do that, so I'm not suggesting that one should be a laggard. But I also don't think in many of these cases, it's who's first to market, it's who's most thoughtful to market, I believe will win.
So we were talking, or you were talking with the students earlier, how this whole evolution has taken place. I mean, even since your TED Talk in 2011, the world is a completely different place. We were talking about at one point it's ethanol, and then it's fuel cells, and all of these different modes. And now everybody seems to be moving more toward electrification.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I mean, a few years ago, you heard a lot of talk about ethanol, and then things like cellulosic ethanol, and then, of course, fuel cells, which was basically an onboard chemical factory, and compressed natural gas. I mean, all these things have their moment. But the reality is our country and our world can't stand multiple tear-ups to the infrastructure. And so there's a big bet being placed on electrification by Ford and by others. And the infrastructure still has to be built out. And so I think that's where we're all headed. Now, of course, there's a great series of decisions that have to be made in terms of how you derive the electricity. Because if it's a dirty power plant, then you really haven't helped society in the way that pure electrification will for the vehicle. But the hope is, and the expectation is, that renewables get better and better with each generation and they become a bigger part of the equation. And then electrification really does make sense. So, but you're right, we've had a lot of different discussions over the years about different types of fuels. But right now, and I think it's the right bet, most of us are betting hard on electrification.
One of the students, as you recall, asked how long it takes to charge an electric car, and I thought your answer was very interesting. Share.
Well, if you want to brown out the neighborhood, you can do it pretty quickly. But, that's the thing. There's a lot of hype around everything that I'm talking about today. There's a lot of hype around EVs, a lot of hype around autonomous vehicles, a lot of hype around 3D printing. I mean, almost every technology, you'll read a story that says, somebody's got this amazing breakthrough. And guess what? They do. There are amazing breakthroughs being taking place all the time. The question is, can you commercialize it in a way that actually works? And some of the answers are yes, but not yet. Some of the answers are they don't really make sense in terms of mass commercialization. So the one I said to the kids, or they're not kids, in fact, they're incredibly smart young people, which I'd like to hire most of them. And a couple of them grilled me harder than the analysts do, which I thought was pretty amazing. But and we are working on getting the stock price up, so which was the first question the young people were asking. But you can charge very, very quickly. The question is when is it the most efficient time to charge? Sometimes that'll probably be in the evening late when the rates come down. So there are a lot of different ways you can charge a vehicle. You'll have fast charge available, but you'll also have more conventional.
That's great. Let's shift. Oh, actually, one more question on this. So
you're pretty good at this, by the way.
All right. Uh-huh. Oh, good. Maybe I have another career in me yet. Who knows? So keeping with this whole, the crazy pace of change in your world, and I know there are many bets to be made, and everybody, your competitors are making them. You have to. So, in your heart, why is Ford going to be one of the winners at the end of the day?
I believe,
with my whole heart,
we will be one of the winners. And I believe it's for a couple things. One is we are investing in all these technologies. And it's very hard to know, competitively where you stand, because, there's a lot of false information and there's a lot of rumor. But I believe that across the spectrum of these new technologies, we're well positioned. I also believe, though, if you think back to what I said a minute ago about keeping the human being at the center of everything that one has to do, that's something that we're doing, and that's something that Jim Hackett is incredibly good at, and that's really part of his whole ethos, and one of the reasons I really wanted to bring him in, because I believe that we have the opportunity and can translate that so that our customers will find that we actually make their lives easier and not more confusing. Because there are so many ways that technology can be deployed just for technology's sake that leave people frustrated, not understanding how to use it, and in the end, it's a miserable experience. And so I believe we can do that. I believe we will do that. But there are no guarantees. Look, I wake up every single morning, scared, and I say that in a good way, because I think if you don't wake up that way, you become complacent, and this world there's no room for complacency.
So we're going to do mobility based on the human, and it's not all about technology, but if you were to talk technology for just a few minutes, what technologies are you keeping your eye on that kind of piqued your interest?
Well, I mean, you know, I suppose if I went to one big one, it would be artificial intelligence, because that really has the capability of either transforming things in an incredibly positive way or not. And AI is kind of a broad term, and people don't really know exactly what it means. It's sort of like mobility. What does mobility mean? I mean, right. It's sort of a catch-all. But elements of AI can help us make a much better vehicle, a much safer vehicle. It can help us do it more cheaply. It can provide a better customer experience. I mean, there are a lot of things that AI will do to transform the entire vehicle experience. I was about to say ownership experience, but ownership as we know it doesn't exist or won't exist in the same way either in the future. So, and of course, nothing is going to happen with the blink of an eye. And this is important. We're not going to all wake up one morning and there'll be a magic date in which everything's transformed. This will happen at varying degrees of opt-in. Look, on autonomous vehicles, if we have some early setbacks, that could set back the timing, people's confidence. I mean, so there are a lot of variables that will, but this, everything we're talking about, from 3D printing to artificial intelligence to autonomous vehicles, electrification, they're all coming. And people always ask me, well, give me a date. And it's not all about a date, because it's really about when it's ready for prime time. And I think the biggest mistake we can all do is introduce technology that isn't ready for prime time just to get it out there. And then people will have either a frustrating experience at best or perhaps a negative experience, which will set the whole thing back. So, but it's all, every bit of that is coming and will affect our business. And I think there is tremendous opportunity for Southeastern Michigan in this. Tremendous. Because we have more engineers here than any other part of the world. We know how to make vehicles here. We know, importantly, we know how to integrate technology into vehicles here. It's not just about the technology. It's also about integrating into vehicles. And we have a city in Detroit that wants to be a test bed for a lot of this new stuff, which is awesome, because Detroit should be.
Yeah.
And so I think we're going to, you know, just as I mentioned, there's going to be tremendous wealth created in this space. I think that could be true and will be true for our region as well. I really do think that we are sort of at the very, very, very early days of a relaunching economically of Southeastern Michigan. I can't begin to tell you precisely who the winners and losers will be in terms of technologies or players, but it's going to happen. And the winners will have a higher margin business, less capital intensive, a much more sustainable business, as a result of all of this.
That is great. Let's go back to 2001. This was built when? What year?
Roughly, yeah.
2001, 2002. So, gosh, did any of us think that downtown Detroit would look the way that it does right now? I mean, we've seen so much wonderful change just in the last 10 years.
Last 2 years. I mean,
yeah, really.
It just keeps happening and accelerating. Yeah, it's amazing. And I, you know, as somebody, well, we're both lifelong, and I won't give your age away, but I've been doing this for 60 years.
Yeah, that'd be the first time.
I've seen it. I remember the riots, and I remember the aftermath of the riots, and I remember, someday I'll tell you some great stories about my dad saving the season tickets from Tiger Stadium during the midst of the riots, but that's a whole different story. But I remember all of this, and you know, to be part of this is just amazing. And I do believe the best is we're just scratching the surface for Detroit and for this region.
I do too. I know for me, it's been 27 years in this business community, and about the same for you, and well, maybe longer, but. And it's such an exciting place to be now. I mean, we've just grown up in some way, and I think it's just beyond fantastic how we're all working together and we all have some common goals, and I just think it's great. What do you think about the Amazon headquarters opportunity?
Well, I mean,
take some of your workforce.
Well, that's all right. I mean, you know, they're also, you know, they are very interested in solving a lot of the same problems that we are. So there's tremendous collaboration possibilities there, too. I mean, if they came here, it would be awesome. But if they don't come here, it's still going to be awesome for Detroit. And, you know, I really believe our future, particularly as we start deploying a lot of these technologies and Detroit becomes a testbed for it, I think you're going to see Detroit. You know, Detroit's really now in the national spotlight as a comeback city, but it's not really in the spotlight yet for what it's doing. And I believe that that's going to be the next phase of this. It's going to be what's going on in Detroit, more than just the new restaurants and the new lofts that are being built and the new arena, all of which is great. But it's going to be what is actually happening in Detroit.
And so what do you mean by that?
Well, you think about all these new technologies, and if they're all being deployed and tested in Detroit, autonomous vehicles, you know, being deployed in the streets of Detroit as a test bed for delivery, for people moving, for all kinds of things, then all of a sudden Detroit really becomes part of a really very different future kind of discussion.
And I'm assuming there's still collaboration going on with, you know, General Motors and, in all of these areas. You have to put your heads together.
No question. And, you know, I mean, GM and Chrysler and, you know, and the tier ones, I mean, they're investing billions in this new technology, all of them. And they all have amazing things going. And we're all generally going in the same direction, but each of us will have our own emphasis, areas of emphasis and areas of excellence. But yeah, I mean, I think this is a, you know, and I think, we, you know, the firms here are really well positioned in terms of the future. And so, I'm very optimistic, not just about Ford, but by, you know, GM, Chrysler, FCA, I guess, and the tier ones. I mean, it's interesting. You know, Delphi just made a big acquisition of an autonomous company, which my Fontenelle's Partners was also an investor in. But you know, you see Siemens and other companies doing amazing things, and it's really fun. It's really fun because all of the business models are going to be remade and rebuilt. And as I said a minute ago, if we do this right, it will be less cyclical, less capital intensive, higher margin, and much more sustainable. Therefore,
where do you see our state in 20 years? I mean, I think the whole Business Leaders for Michigan was such, at least for me, and I've been hanging with all of you for several years, but I think there were so many new insights when Doug and team finally put those initial reports together that you led that initiative.
Well, you know, I'll date myself. I was part of the very first team where the business leaders from the east side met with the business leaders from the west side, and there was nothing in common. I mean, it was born of some comments made about from the east side saying there are no cultural institutions we're supporting on the west side. Well, of course, you can imagine that reaction. That was in the press. So the west side leaders said, well, we want to meet with you guys. And I was very young at the time, but I was part of the east side delegation. And the split in the state was absolutely amazing. I mean, it was Republican, Democrat, union, non-union, you know, growth, no growth. I mean, you could, you know, and it was sort of pitched along those lines. And Jim Hackett, interestingly, was part of the West Side delegation all those years ago. That's when I first met Jim. And we've come a long, long way as a state in terms of bringing the business community together. And what we realized in the course of all those discussions is obviously we have a whole lot more in common than we did in terms of disagreements. And that everything that happened in the state affected all of us. You couldn't just contain it to an east side, west side kind of thing. So I'm very bullish on the state. I mean, I think, again, the reason is our educational institutions are really well positioned. A lot of these trends I'm talking about, they're all over it. And not only that, they're used to working with companies. And that's not true in a lot of other states. A lot of other states have great universities, but they don't work well or don't have a long relationship with companies. Our educational institutions do. Yeah, and that's a big difference.
So workforce, I was mentioning to Bill, I saw, and I'm sure many of you did too, we had the privilege of having Dr. Toby Cosgrove, who is the president and CEO of Cleveland Clinic, at the Economic Club last week, and he shared some terrifying statistics in terms of our population. He was asked, what would be the three things, you know, that you would say if we could do that we would improve the health of our population? And it was smoking, it was obesity. He said 40% of us are overweight, 70% are overweight, 40% are obese, and opiates. And 60,000 people are going to die this year from opiates, which was more than the whole Vietnam War. I mean, it's so scary. And when you think about all the employers in the room, our children, our grandchildren, I mean, how do you even start to get your hands around something?
Well, I do think, you know, it's all about wellness and wellness programs and actually, you know, people taking individual accountability, but then also employers providing the education and the forums for this because, you know, I'm a huge believer in wellness, always have been. But you see things now that you never would have seen. I mean, we have meditation sessions at Ford, you know, mindfulness sessions at Ford. You know, in yoga classes. I mean, all these things that, you know, you think about a traditional manufacturing company.
Right.
When I joined Ford, if you'd told me that we were having those things, I mean, these are our executives
right.
All had foot-long cigars back in the day, and, you know, their stomachs hanging out like this, and, you know, two martini lunches, and, you know, and so, you know, it's a very, very, very different culture, and I think we just need to keep pushing hard on that.
I do, too.
Well, wait, before you kick me off stage, I just want to say, because I know I see the 1 minute, we're getting the hook.
Well, no, 1 minute we're going to ask audience questions.
Oh, well, I still want to say something nice about you.
What?
Yes.
I've been waiting 12 and a half years.
Yeah, so listen hard. It's only going to happen once. No, now, Beth has been amazing. You know, you all know what a great leader she's been, how much fun she is, and how she keeps everything really upbeat but also right on point. And I wouldn't have done this for 12 years plus if it hadn't been for Beth. I never would have agreed every year to say yes. And we did have some tough times. Back in the, you know, the really dark days for this region, many of you know that this club was almost in bankruptcy. And Beth's leadership was amazing to not only get us through the most difficult times. We literally, in my office, we set up a phone bank and we did dialing for dollars. To just trying to keep the doors open. And without her leadership and without her passion for this place, it never would have happened. And so here we are years later. The club is in really good shape. Please continue to pay your dues. That doesn't mean you guys can take it off. But no, the club's in great shape. We've built up a strategic reserve. She keeps innovating with new programs like the Young People's Program. What do you call
young
it?
Young Leader.
The Young Leaders Program. And there's always new stuff going on here to make it fun and relevant and to keep people coming. So, Beth, I just want to say thank you on behalf of everybody here. You've done an amazing job.
You.
So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to give you a hug. Ooh, sorry, AV. Okay, where are those audience questions? Okay. Thank you, Bill.
Oh, certainly.
I hope somebody was recording that. It's been a long 12 and a half years waiting for that to come. No, I'm kidding. Okay, let's see. Okay, much is made in the press of Tesla's valuation versus companies like Ford and General Motors. Mm-hmm. What is the one thing you believe Ford has done to differentiate itself and prepare for the disruptive technologies that, well, you've said some of this, but let's talk about Tesla versus, say, Ford, GM.
I don't want to say anything negative about Tesla. You know, they've done a really nice job. My hat's off to them. You know, I went out to visit them before. People think Elon Musk was their founder. He was. There was a guy named Martin Eberhard who was their first CEO. And I went out to see them when Martin was the CEO of Tesla. It was really interesting. I was really taken by the technology. I said to him, the hard part, though, is going to be sort of the blocking and tackling of the business that isn't very sexy, but you need to do. I think you're seeing them maybe struggle a little bit with some of that now, years later, as they struggle with growth. But, you know, look, my hat's off to them. They've done a really nice job. But what do we have uniquely that we bring to the table? Well, I could talk about all the technologies, and I could talk about all the huge investments we're making in areas that I feel will pay off for us. But I really think the biggest thing we have going for us is Ford has been named one of the world's most ethical companies 8 years in a row. And of all the things, I'm really proud of our employees. I'm so proud of them. And of all the things that we have going for us, that's what I'm most proud of. No other car company is on that list. And so what does that mean? It means people trust us. And now we have to earn that trust all the time. But if we go into this new world with the trust of people, that is a huge advantage. And so we can squander that trust. Absolutely, we could squander it. But if we don't squander it, and if we continue to build on what we've done to date to earn people's trust around the world, then they're going to trust us as new technologies are being introduced. They're going to trust us as new paradigms are being created. They're going to trust us when we ask them to access their vehicle in new and different ways. And so to me, that's not an advantage I could ever take for granted, but I think it's real.
Thank you. So we have lots of people voted for this question. What advice would you give to your 30-year-old self?
Well, I have a 26-year-old son sitting here, and I gave him lots of advice, most of which he completely disregards. Smart young man. I'm not a big believer in advice, because I think everybody has to find their own way. I do think, though, that being curious your whole life is really important, because one of the things that I see in so many people that have aged as I have, I was leaving you out of this. They feel like they figured life out, they figured business out, and they have a formula. But our world is changing so quickly, and it's so fascinating that I think, it was interesting when Jim Hackett was hired. You know, I think Jim's 62, and somebody said to me, "Do you think a 62-year-old is relevant for this new world?" And I said, "It's all about how you think." Because you can be incredibly youthful in your outlook. Someone like Jim is incredibly, he's the most curious person I know. So to me, that is, of all the things that I could say, and the other is just don't ever believe your self-importance, because the minute you start to believe that is when bad things start to happen to you, I think. And so, and beyond that, just have a really good BS detector, because I think that will always serve people well in life.
I call it inhaling your own exhaust.
Exactly.
Okay. So this, I know we talked a little bit about Jim Hackett, but let me read this question because it's a very popular one. Your CEO, Jim Hackett, recently presented goals of a 20% decrease in product engineering and new vehicle development time at the same time as a move to new electric and battery electric vehicles. In simple terms, what will Ford do differently to achieve these goals?
Well, that's the key question. So, if you think about an EV, it's less complex than putting together an internal combustion engine. So, fewer parts, should be less development time. There are a lot of things that go into that which will simplify the business. But beyond that, it is employing a lot of these new techniques and new technologies that will enable us to do just that, to meet our goals. But the basic premise of the question is absolutely right. If we did nothing different, then the only thing we could really do is slash and burn on headcount. We've been down that road before, and it doesn't work. So we have to do things differently. And inherent in that are a lot of these new techniques.
That's great. Okay. By the way, there were several votes. I was going to ask you about the Ethisphere's most ethical company, but we already talked about that, so congratulations.
Thank you.
In a recent Sustainability Cities Mobility Index, Detroit has an overall rank of 81 among the top 100 global cities. How could Ford, its supplier partners, and community stakeholders help the city improve that ranking and the quality of life for its citizens over the next few years?
Well, there's a lot we can do. And if I just stay with our business, mobility, the biggest predictor, I think Brookings and Harvard did a study together that said the biggest predictor of people being able to get out of poverty is getting to where the work is. Well, the problem in a lot of Detroit, and this is true of a lot of major cities, the work is outside the city, and residents don't have a good way to get to where the work is. So if we can start providing solutions to residents, and those solutions may be anything from easier transitions from one type of public transport to another, much easier ticketing, or it could be launching of different kinds of shuttles that can start to get people from A to B in a way that is both cost-effective and good. And we've launched a company called Chariot, which is doing just that. There are a lot of ways that we can start to really affect the quality of life just by attacking some of the transportation issues in the southeastern Michigan area. And beyond that, we have a startup in Ford where it's now just with Beaumont, but where we're actually working to get people through a shuttle service to their appointments on time, particularly elderly people, because there's enormous problem with that. So there are lots of different ideas that we're exploring, things that we're doing, and I know GM is doing many things as well, as are others, to really start to impact the quality of life of people in this area. When I said a minute ago about using Detroit as a test bed, mm-hmm. a lot of those new services will also be tested here in Detroit to see if they can really start to affect the quality of life and raise the standard of living in this area.
That's great. Back to the whole, there's a lot of questions, many of which we've covered on electric vehicles, autonomous mobility, all this stuff. How do you view, there's a lot of talk about the technology, and then it's the human and the car. How do you look at our relationship with the Silicon Valley? Are we partners? Are we together? Are we not?
It will be.
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes. I mean, the term out there is frenemies. And, I think that's a term we're having to become much more familiar with. And it's very different for us. The auto industry, traditionally Ford had its supply base and GM had its supply base and Chrysler had its, and sometimes they overlap. But, it's pretty defined. In this new world, you may be collaborating with somebody on this and they may be trying to kill you over here in something else.
Right.
That's just the world we live in. And we have to get used to that. It'll be a much more fluid world. It'll be a world of ideas and pursuing the best ideas, regardless of where they come from. They may come from startups. They may come from big technology companies. They may come from our traditional supply base. We have to be facile and nimble enough to be able to work with all of them. And that's not something, frankly, that comes inherently to big companies like ours. But I do think this notion of friends and competitors is something that's just the world we are going to live in, and we better get used to it.
Okay. So we're going to end on two student questions.
Sure.
One is, what advice would you give our students here today as they are embarking, hopefully, onto college or whatever post-high school training that they'll have?
Well, other than the kind of useless advice I gave a few minutes ago, I would also say, that focusing on STEM education and also software development. So much of, if you think of what needs to be done in our industry to do everything that we've been talking about, software really becomes critical. And so, hardware will still be critical, and we'll still absolutely need hardware engineers, but there's going to be a real need in this area in southeastern Michigan for software engineering. And so if you have any interest in that or any ability in that, I would really encourage students to pursue that. So because I think there's going to be a great need for that for as long as I can see out.
I completely agree. Okay, the last question from a student. I know this is going to be hard for you to answer. What kind of a car do you drive? Because I know you drive more than one.
Well, I drive whatever I want, which is cool.
Okay.
No, it's one of the great things about my job is I get to drive everything, and I love to drive. So, this world of autonomous vehicles and everything, But I think...
Not for you.
Well, it might be for me, depending on this. I think you'll see a lot of this, frankly. I think you'll see people choosing what form of transport they're going to take, depending on what they want to do. So if you're, already if you live downtown and you want to get to the new Little Caesars Arena, you might take an Uber or a Lyft, and it might be an AV picking you up in a few years to take you there. But if you live in downtown Detroit and you want to go to your cottage in northern Michigan, you might want to get in your vehicle and drive up. So I think, you know, one size won't fit all.
Right.
The individual ownership of vehicles won't just go away. And I think the way everybody in this room will access a vehicle will depend upon the situation they're in. If they're, you know, again, if they're in New York City and just want to get around, an AV vehicle might be the best way to do it. They might want to still have a Shelby Mustang in their garage, though, because I know I always will.
I was going to ask you, okay, so I know what your favorite car is.
Exactly.
Shelby Mustang. Anyway, Bill Ford, thank you.
No, thank
my
you,
gosh.
Beth.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. So appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.